Welcome one and all to Umami Manga. I'm Petter, and this is James.
Hello!
And today we're talking about Volume 4 of A Bride's Story. Quick summary for this volume. Azel and his cousins talk to the Badan clan about forming an alliance between the two clans. The Aeon family discusses the Russian conquest of the area around them. Mr. Smith meets Lila and Laylee and starts acting as a doctor in their hometown. The twins, Lila and Laylee, are desperately searching and scheming to get husbands. And the plan becomes for the twins to marry the brothers Sarman and Farsami. And we get to follow along as these two ships begin to float, I guess. Leading up to marriage plans, wedding preparations, and a crash course in bridehood. And then the volume ends with a side story where Yusuf takes his oldest son to buy a horse at the horse market. So yeah, very, very much focus on, well, Henry Smith's side of the story yet again. Even though he himself wasn't present all that much. But it was still, I guess, his area of the story.
Right. This is kind of what I expected with Volume 3, to be honest. I felt like he was just going to be there and then we would see the story play out with a different character. I wanted it to happen eventually, but I just didn't think it was going to be the third volume where he would find a love interest in a way.
Right.
But yes, the focus is in his part of the world at this point.
Definitely.
Just with him in the background.
For sure. And something that I didn't really expect to happen this soon, or kind of this early into the manga, was for it to really go away quite a lot from Amir and Karluk.
Oh, okay.
Because their roles in this volume especially was incredibly small.
True.
That's something that I think I was kind of expecting to happen at some point, but not, I didn't really see it happening this soon, but I don't mind it. It's fun to get some variation in setting, variation in characters and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's a little unique not having the focus be on a set of characters. Like, we know that they're the main family, the main characters, but in this story, it seems that their plot is just happening in the background of these various arcs, you know?
Right. I think so. Yeah. Very well. Let's kick off by talking about Lila and Laylee. And yes, I see them as a set.
Yeah, I put them together
about
too.
Them at the same time.
Yeah.
The twins of the RLC. They are a bit much.
Very rambunctious, I'd say. I do love their synergy, their energy, and the combined effort that they put into whatever task they wanted to do. They seemed very capable in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the most impressive one was when their grandmother more or less tricked them to get a huge banquet. They caught all sorts of things.
True.
By their bare hands. It's incredibly impressive.
Right.
But most of the time, they use that energy, at least now in this age, to have a chance encounter with their dream fellow.
Exactly. Yeah, they are very adamant about that. To find themselves grooms, and their standards are very high. In terms of a lot of things, really. Wealth, looks, and a lot of things like that.
Sheep.
And the lengths that they go to in order to get their men is obviously absurd.
It's pretty hilarious.
It's funny.
Love one of my favorite moments, I mean, besides, you know, the throwing the fish and things like that, is when they hear about one of their Ansu went to her own, like, kind of drastic measure to get the groom of her choice, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. And the mom's like, don't you dare, I know what you're thinking.
That's really bad influence. Oh goodness. Yeah, but you know, you mentioned like some of their capabilities and part the things that they actually do seem to be quite good at, or like just in general, like good deeds that they are able to pull off, among admittedly a lot of not so great deeds that we see them do in this volume, and like the way that they speak in certain ways, and like they're
yeah
really kind of standards that are not where they ought to be, perhaps, in terms of what they're looking for, what they feel like they should have. Either way, something that I really did like from them was really their introduction, where they saved Henry Smith.
Ah.
Because they were in the boat fishing, I guess, and they saw him fall into the water, and it just without hesitation, they both leap into the water to save his life. I thought that was very, very sweet.
Yeah.
And that was, I believe, before they got the idea to, like, con people that way. Because it seemed later on that they got the idea to con people after having gone through the experience with Smith.
That's true. They were kind of lamenting the fact that he wasn't some rich local prince for them to milk, you know?
Yeah.
But they sure tried after that. Sure tried.
Oh, yes. But I do find it pretty beautiful how they both have a bit of a turnaround as they each actually start to like their respective fiancés.
Yeah.
Kind of as they spend time with them, since, you know, those brothers are not wealthy. So to see these twins who seemed very keen on finding someone wealthy actually start to like someone that isn't, is a sweet, sweet thing.
Right.
And then there's the whole looks thing about, like, they wanted to find someone who was good looking. Personally, I think those two brothers are perfectly fine looking.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's sometimes hard to tell with a manga, you know, everyone's good looking more or less.
Fair.
Not everybody. But of course, I agree with you that they're drawn very well.
Right.
At least decently. I do feel kind of bad for them in that, well, them being both Lila, Laylee, and Sarm and Sammy, in that, for one, the twins are dreaming about grand princes and things like that. You know, they're dreaming big.
Oh, yeah.
But deep down, they knew, just as the brothers knew, that they would be betrothed to each other. They just kind of felt like it was going to happen.
Right, yeah.
But I agree with you. It was sweet to see their opinions change. And, you know, it's kind of the history of arranged marriages, is that, you know, once you're in that situation, it doesn't always pan out that way, of course, but once you're in that situation, you can kind of discover the good sides of people and end up actually really liking them. Not that I would ever advocate it for today, of course, but
no.
I think that for a time and in some cases, it actually was a romantic way of meeting someone. But obviously just not for our day and age.
Yes. No, I agree. But it is very convenient, while I guess also pretty sweet in a way, that there's no love triangles or anything like that occurring between these. Like, the pairings come very naturally, and it aligns very nicely.
Yeah, I honestly thought we were gonna see the other pair go on a date and to see what would happen there, but they kind of just paired them off, and then they were good with that. I was like, all right, hey, that works. You know, they didn't switch.
Right.
At least we didn't see that. Maybe
precisely.
They did, but they never said they did.
I imagine that they would have paired off the other way around as well, off page. But we definitely didn't see it. So, we can't say for sure.
If they did, which it would make sense that they did.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame we didn't see it. I would have liked to have seen the comparison, the differences, and maybe that would have made the mess that you're grateful that we didn't have. But I don't know. I mean, they both seem pretty content with who they chose, and
yeah,
and they like each other. So it would have been interesting to see why they didn't choose the other one.
Right. You know, no, I agree.
Not in a mean way, of course, but just maybe like, you know, I'm just not feeling the vibes. You know,
precisely, it's, to see the difference in chemistry between the characters.
Yeah.
And especially since particularly Lila and Laylee are very much alike. like there's no denying that.
Yeah.
So it would be, I guess, extra interesting to see how they would react differently to the two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is very funny and very sweet to see how they, like, but both Lila and Laylee, kind of feel sorry for the other one, thinking that they got the better guy.
I love that moment. It's so
very
much
cute.
I got the better guy. it was so great.
It's adorable.
So great. Speaking of Sarm and Sammy, I just want to throw out that they do a great job of kind of accommodating, well, particularly Sarm, who accommodates for Lila and says, I'll promise to, you know, get a lot of sheep like you want, do anything you ask. I can't change my looks. I would if I could, but I can't.
Yeah.
But he's very accommodating for her. And I thought that was, I don't know, a really good move on his part. I hope that Lila also tries to be accommodating in the same way, but
yeah,
I feel like they're both young. I'm sure they'll grow up.
Right, precisely. I'm sure like that trait of Lila and Laylee is most likely mm-hmm. going to mellow out, or like they're going to mature more.
And
not always be the way they were portrayed here in all with all of those types of traits.
Yeah. And then it was with Sammy. I love how it was the spear fishing that got Laylee to really start liking him.
Yeah.
But also the Riz, like the man like whips out a pearl, is like, I saved this for my future wife.
Right.
Since it's you, here you go. It's like, oh. I say Riz, that it was a good move. But maybe Sarm maybe one upped him with the kiss that he did.
Right.
I mean, look, she wasn't specific about where she wanted to be kissed.
No.
Although I think when I read that, I figured, oh yeah, like, you know, the cheek or something like that. I just went straight for it.
I mean,
straight for the lips.
I think I was actually, or in my mind, I was actually like Saruman was there. I was also just imagining a kiss on the lips, even though maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, okay.
Evidently she thought it was wrong. But yeah, she could have been more specific. And also,
no, totally.
Ultimately, I don't think she really minded it.
No. I don't. Probably part of that's just embarrassment, you know, of course. In the situation. But like I said, you know, the Riz. That's part of the reason why she got the better guy. But did she get a pearl, though? You know? I think it's going to work out for them.
Yeah, yeah, I have a good feeling as well. We also learned that Lila and Laylee have barely spent any time apart from one another in their whole lives.
True.
So I think it'll, like, now that they're getting married, I think it'll be interesting to see how that might affect them. Like, since they'll likely be spending more time apart now than they ever have before. So I think it'll be a good experience for them, and it'll be interesting to see if and how they could grow from that. Plus, it won't be too, but like they won't be separated by a long distance or anything like that. They'll have each other close by anyway. But still, they will be spending less time together.
I think people's circumstances do change them, their personality. Unlike some people, I do believe change is possible.
For sure.
And I think these two, because of maybe who they marry and then where they end up living and the responsibilities that be placed on them, I think maybe they may end up, maybe have a differing personalities, opinions, and mindsets and whatnot, but maybe not really quick, and maybe we won't even see it in the next volume. But either way, I do agree with you that they'll become more of their own person as they grow up.
Right. Definitely hope so.
I was going to talk about, I guess, the marriage situation. You know, once that happens, I guess I should say the living situation. So we know that, at least with the Ahon family, the youngest son ends up taking over for the father. Like, he'll become the future patriarch, right? Is that, was that, that was established in the first volume,
correct? I think so. I think so, yeah.
So then, and we know that one of his sisters, Karlik's sisters, brought her husband into the, into their family. So he's living there with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what his, where, what happens when Karlik gets older or what, but it's not entirely clear to me. So what happens with this family as well, with the twins?
Mm.
There's an elder brother and a younger brother. Does the elder brother go live with the twins' family, and then the younger brother stays with Layla, and they, or no, was it Layli?
The younger brother and Layli, yeah.
Yeah, Layli. Do they stay with the fisherman family? Like, why would they be together? I don't know. Like, what? Help me make understand. I don't understand living situations.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I definitely am not quite sure either. I also, I don't know for sure, but I got the feeling that the case in the Aeon family where Yusuf is living with them, I got the feeling that that's kind of an exception or kind of a not super common thing to happen in this culture or in this society, is just the feeling I got. I don't know for sure though.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think that in terms of Sarm and Sami's family, I'm pretty sure they have younger siblings. So even in the end, like, those younger siblings would probably take over the household. So I guess the twins would go their separate ways eventually in their own household.
Right.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why you couldn't stay with the mom, really.
I would guess that they're probably not in a rush to leave their parents necessarily.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But who? What do I know?
So the village in the RLC, Munak, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
It's a thriving fishing industry. But obviously, as we discussed in the previous, or what we mentioned in the previous discussion, the RLC is gone.
Nowadays, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's dried up.
Mm-hmm.
If I understand that the sea, as it says in the volume, the sea got its water from the snow. Well, apparently, the snow in the mountains, I should clarify. But apparently, the Soviets ended up using the source, that water source from the tributaries and whatnot, for irrigation and things like that. Oh. And I guess there was other, maybe potential harmful chemicals that were being used and whatnot. And that ended up causing the RLC to dry up because the source was just not providing enough.
So that's the reason?
Yes, as far as I understand.
What? So the... What? I had no idea that it was something so, I guess, specific that would have caused the RLC to dry up.
Yeah. You would think, oh, it was climate change or something like that. And I guess you could argue maybe there is a bit of that. But according to my research, but let me double check. Yeah, it was Soviet Union issues.
Interesting. Do you know if it was during this conquest or if it was at a later time that this started happening?
Later time, I believe. Like,
I see.
I think post World War II, to be honest.
Oh, that recently. I see. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God damn it.
The disappearance of the lake, as they call it, was no surprise to the Soviets. They expected it to happen long before.
Oh.
As early as 1964, they explained it was part of the 5-year plans approved by the Council of Ministers. Nobody on a lower level would dare to say a word contradicting those plans, even if it was the fate of the ROC. So they were pretty committed to it.
Man.
Some Soviet experts apparently consider the arrow to be nature's error. And a Soviet engineer said, it is obvious to everyone that the evaporation of the ROC is inevitable. Wow.
Gosh.
These guys.
That's, oh my goodness. Whew. Well.
Yeah. So that was all in the 60s that these people were talking. So.
Huh. Dang.
There you go.
Interesting.
It was part of the Soviet government plan for cotton or white gold to become a major export. So they used rivers and tributaries and whatnot that eventually led to Arrow City drying up. Anyway, so yes, that's what happened.
Wow.
And I tried to see if there was an actual Munak town there. I didn't find the Munak name.
Gotcha.
I did find one that was called Moynak.
Ah.
It, obviously, that's probably not how you pronounce it. Or Moynok. Moynok is an O instead of an A before the Q.
Gotcha.
And you can go there and see the previous, like, sea level, you know, where the lake used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, a museum to it and whatnot. No one is, or not no one, but the population has much diminished. It is no longer the thriving town that it used to be.
Right, yeah, understandably.
Obviously.
Mm.
So, just interesting to see that, or the comparison with what it was in 1890, whatever.
Right, exactly. Like, it's such recent history that all this happened, and it's fascinating, and it's crazy.
Very sad.
Yeah, so sad.
That's all.
Alrighty, then let's talk a bit about Henry Smith next. His journey to Ankara is halted, as he ends up spending several days, or maybe even several weeks, I don't know exactly, in this fishing village that we were just talking about, posing as a doctor. And the funny part, I think, is that he seems to be doing such a good job at it that nobody doubts him at all.
Yeah.
He's very popular as a doctor, despite not being one.
It's hilarious. Honestly, I thought it was going to be a disaster, and I thought they were going to get really mad. It's like, wait, are you really a doctor? But
yeah, especially considering, like, the first impression of the grandpa. But he was quickly turned around on that.
It makes you wonder how capable Henry really is. Maybe he's selling himself short if he just keeps on finding ways to help out these people.
Right. I kind of get that feeling as well, especially considering it's been... Or, I mean, it seems like he's been helping a lot of people in the town out now by now.
Right. They can't all have dislocated shoulders.
Right.
Henry.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess maybe he learned some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, then he is not really in the center for most of the volume. But at the very end of the book, he sort of becomes relevant again as... someone found his golden pocket watch.
I know, dude.
and like,
I totally was talking about that.
Yeah. And the fact that those pages came even after the afterword was like kind of caught me off guard, because I thought, like, okay, the volume is over now. But then came that, like, it's really like a post credit scene, and
it's very ominous.
It makes me wonder if Talas will come back into the story after all. Because I hadn't,
I know.
Like, I hadn't really thought so, but the fact that this continues in some way makes me wonder why this was included in the book.
Yeah, since we're talking about it here, I was maybe gonna save it for predictions, but I'll talk about it here.
Yes.
So the man picking up the watch, he seems to be wearing a very specific type of hat, and I feel like that could either be a Russian hat, or maybe one from Kyrgyzstan, Kyrgyzstan. At least from what I could tell, just based on pictures and comparing it to other pictures.
Oh, I see.
So if it's Kyrgyzstan, if it's just like some random guy who's in the area, maybe it could end up reuniting Talas and Henry in that way. That, you know, that could be very sweet.
Yeah.
But what if it's a Russian who ends up finding this pocket watch? And it's like, there's an English person out here.
Right.
What the crap? And some sort of very nefarious stuff starts happening, where they start trying to hunt down Henry. Not sure. Alternatively, maybe the man tries to sell it, because it is a gold watch, right?
For sure, right.
And maybe that, not as exciting, but maybe that leads to, again, the Talas and Henry reuniting. But I don't know.
Yeah, right. I really don't know. Speaking of his clothing, the only thing I thought of was that it looked like it was more like warm clothing than we're used to seeing.
True.
Which I think makes sense, since he's in the desert at night, and deserts become very cold at night time. So
yeah,
that was my only observation, though. I didn't really think of, like, where he could be from, but That is interesting. Yeah, I guess there isn't much really that we could know so far, but it was just interesting. I thought that it was addressed again, because I personally hadn't really expected it, but now it's got to lead to something, right?
Yep.
So yep. That's exciting.
Yep. I'm very happy they took that course and it wasn't just left to the side to never be addressed.
Absolutely. Moving on next to Paria. She got to meet that boy again, and I guess she'll get to see him again still.
Yeah, well, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Even if she doesn't seem to think that she will get to see him.
Yeah, no. He's definitely interested. Pushing the boy away like she did was hard to see. Because you know you don't want her to mess up. You know she's just very awkward around boys. Just she doesn't know how to act. And it's tough for her.
It is.
But you know she wants to do. Obviously she wants a husband. So she. Yeah, it's tough for her. But I'm glad it seems the boy and his father are very accepting of her quirks.
Right.
And attitude.
That's very refreshing.
Yeah. Either way, I do hope that she apologizes for her mistake of pushing him.
Yeah, that would be nice to see.
When they meet again. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It'll make a good impression, I'm sure.
I think so.
And then I really can't wait for Paria to finally open up and feel comfortable around a boy. If it's, whether it's this boy or a different one.
Uh-huh.
But seeing kind of the same way that the twins and the brothers ended up really bonding very well. I mean, they were childhood friends, so they always kind of got along. But becoming love interests and being more comfortable and that, seeing that with Paria is going to be like almost opening a book or just some sort of revelatory thing where it's going to just feel so satisfying.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I hadn't thought about that exactly, but I agree. That would be... That type of character development for her will be very nice to see. And I'm sure we will see it. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. And then about the boy who we don't have a name for, kind of going with what I had said the previous volume, how we just don't get names sometimes.
Yeah.
The boy's mother seems to be gone. At least I think that's what the father implies, that she passed away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, probably.
And a girl with a bit too much energy is best. So it just seems that the right people at the right time are meeting each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they basically have what they are looking for. Although I do hope that Paria sees something in the boy besides, you know, acceptable and can stand to be near me. You know, maybe she finds something that's attractive about him or personality wise or things like that. That'd be really nice.
And you know, I think there's a really good chance that she will, because
yeah,
so far the vibe that I'm getting from this boy is that he is maybe not, he's not as testosterone mad macho as some men are, and I think those are the type of men that Paria is kind of afraid of / uncomfortable with. So I think already we're seeing some traits in this boy that will be appealing to Paria.
Awesome. I agree.
Yeah. No, it really is true. Like, it takes a certain amount of luck, I guess, a lot of the time to find a good partner in life. Like, to find, like, not just the right person, but as I think said as well, like, the right timing as well, and, like,
yeah,
those types of things matter so much in finding someone, and you do need luck, I think, on some level, to find a good match, kind of.
For sure.
And hopefully, Paria has that luck right here.
Yeah.
Anything else on Paria?
No.
Then let's move on to Amir. There was an interesting transition to her scene in the bathroom, where right before we switch over to her, there was a panel of you see the eyes of a wolf, and then you flip to Amir's face in kind of the same position and the same expression almost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that has significance, but I thought it was an interesting transition.
Yeah, that beginning chapter had a few examples of wolves.
Yes.
And it felt like it was there was a lone wolf that transitioned into Azel, and then Azel transitioned into another wolf who was fighting a different wolf with a seemingly more docile, or at least a less aggressive at that moment wolf watching, and then that transitions to Amir.
Yeah.
And then you have the wolves that are, like, I guess, chilling with each other, playing, and then that transitions to Paria. I don't know if that's connected at all, maybe.
Not sure.
Maybe that's more so Amir. So maybe it's kind of a representation of the Halgal tribe.
Yeah.
As being these wolves.
To a degree, definitely could be. I got the vibe in the, when there's the two wolves fighting and the one wolf watching, and the one that is watching transitions to Amir, I got the feeling that wolf was a female and the other being males fighting over the female. I feel like that's something that happens in nature sometimes, where male animals will fight each other for the female. I don't know if wolves do that though, but I feel like some animals do that.
I did also assume that it was a female wolf, and I guess it makes sense that they'd be fighting over.
And I want, because there have been two clans fighting over Amir in a sense earlier in the story, and I guess the conflict isn't completely settled still.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's supposed to represent the Halgal and the Ahon families fighting over Amir.
Oh. Interesting.
That was just a spontaneous thing that came to mind right now. I really, before this discussion, I had no way. I didn't know how to interpret it at all. But maybe.
Yeah. I didn't think about the Ahon family, but that could be a good comparison. I was really honestly thinking about the Halgal and the Badan, or whatever they're called.
Right.
Being
right.
The wolves or whatever.
That's fair.
But yeah, I guess my request for less nudity did not happen. I mean, she was like, I'll give you the third one, but then I gotta give it all out in the fourth.
Exactly.
She upped the ante.
Mori definitely enjoys to draw her main heroine in the nude.
She does. She really does.
Personally, I don't mind it.
That's fair. I don't know. It doesn't seem necessary, to be honest. Like, the other ones were kind of, like, okay, you know. Actually, the second one was pointless, really. But I guess it showed us what their Bath's situation looked like. This one, I guess you get the oil.
Right, which I assume it's some kind of old-timey hair conditioner.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess you do get that, but I don't know. It felt like we prolonged in that moment for maybe a little too long. Just saying.
That's fair.
But anyway, clearly Amir doesn't really care too much. Like, she's very much, I'll walk around in my undergarments.
Right.
No, Karluk's not here. Why does it matter? It's like, and then the sister was like, please.
Yeah.
Please put some clothes on.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun. But good news for Amir was that the mountain clan that they heard about in the previous volume that had been fighting with the Russians was apparently not the Halgal clan, so that's good. That said, though, the Halgal clan is still not doing great.
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to completely stop Amir and Karluk from ending up visiting Halgal. Because we had talked before about maybe them going there themselves.
Right. Yeah, I wonder.
I don't know. That's all I have on Amir.
Yeah, same here. Then let's move on to her brother, Azel. He was sent to form an alliance with the Badan clan.
Mm-hmm.
After which he was in an apparent foul mood. Did you have any ideas as to why?
Do you think he was looking for a fight?
Oh.
Do you think he was looking to throw his life away?
Oh.
Because when he felt like the talks were about to sour, and it felt like the Baden clan was, you know, not going to take them up the offer, he had ended up having a slight smirk on his face, and it kind of, the camera or the panel showed his sword at his side, like he was he was going to whip it out or something. And then, oh, just kidding. Totally. We'll line up. You know, we're cool.
Right.
And then he just leaves in a huff, and he seems so agitated.
Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm.
It's just a thought I had. Like, maybe he really is having some issues. And he was going to do something maybe a little too rash. But there could also be, maybe he smells a trap. Maybe that's also a thing. But it's that smile that I mentioned.
Right.
I don't know why you would do that unless you're hoping for a fight.
True. That's a good point. I didn't really pick up on that. So you're thinking, like, either he just wanted to fight, like, to get out some aggression by killing some guys here, or maybe that he is on some level suicidal?
I think more so probably the suicidal, maybe.
Hmm. Man.
Because he is kind of being forced to do all sorts of stuff for the clan.
True.
Maybe he's just tired of that.
Yeah.
Alternatively, maybe he wasn't going to get out of that. Like, maybe he expected to get out of it. But maybe what he wanted was to have there be bad blood between the two. And he wants the Hoggall clan to fall.
Oh, because he's kind of getting sick of his uncles and whatnot.
Yeah, because they've kind of ruined the clan themselves. They used to be a pretty decent people. Was it the father that was the ruler, or somebody was the ruler?
Mm-hmm.
But ever since that person's passed away, they've been pretty terrible, it seems.
Exactly. Yeah, the rulership has switched, and yeah, they got worse after that. Hmm.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
So right now, that's probably my main course of thinking.
Right.
I think it explains all the points I brought up.
Yeah, it could.
But, you know, maybe there's something suicidal or something. I mean, that's not pleasant at all to think about, of course. But yeah, either way, something's brewing in Azul's mind, and I'm very curious to see what it is. I am very pleased with the little bits and nuggets we're getting with him, and I hope she continues to deliver on them.
Yeah, same here. I'm very glad that he continues to be relevant and be very fascinating. Like, he continues to be an interesting character with the potential of a depth that I'm very intrigued by.
Yeah.
I don't have any other characters to talk about. What about you?
I guess I'll just say, Yusuf,
You
mentioned picking out a horse, that, you know, that was kind of an interesting moment to see. It's like he's going out to pick a car. Yeah. Like, how many gas miles does this have? Yeah, that was funny. But it was also funny at the very end. His horse got jealous, and he was like,
yeah.
When he said that his son was more precious. What was I supposed to say? Was it a tough spot?
That was very funny. That was a very good extra chapter, a side chapter.
Yeah.
I like getting to know the other members of the Ahan family.
Yeah. That's it for me.
Lovely. Then let's dive into some predictions, or some more predictions. We have been sprinkling some into the discussions already, but...
We have.
In the next discussion, I'm sure we will get the... I guess we can call it double wedding. I think that's for sure happening.
Do you think it'll go smoothly, or do you think there'll be a bit of chaos, or is it going to be, you know, one or two chapters, sweet, heartwarming moment, all right, let's move on, or is there going to be some sort of controversy that occurs?
Interesting question. I don't think it's going to be too dramatic, but I'm sure there's going to be a degree of chaos, but probably not too much. Like, it's not going to, I don't think anything is going to be ruined.
I like that answer. I like it. I'll agree with that.
Sweet. And I guess, though, I could see it being, like, more or less half of the next volume.
Yeah.
Something like that, perhaps. And after all of that is done with, Henry and Ali will continue their journey to Ankara. Like, I'm sure we will see the continuation of their journey, at least to some extent. And thus, I think the story is going to leave Lila and Layli.
Yeah.
Either forever or for a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, once Henry and Ali leave, maybe, you know, a few volumes down the line, we get not necessarily a bonus chapter, but just a chapter saying, hey, let's see how the twins are doing.
Right, yeah, like a checkup chapter kind of
situation. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like that. I
could totally see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think we will for sure see Pariah's, I guess, bride story continue,
mm-hmm.
at least to some extent in the next volume.
Yeah, I think she'll apologize, although she'll struggle to do so. I think she will do it, and that will curry even more favor between them.
Yeah.
And then we will learn the boy's name finally.
Oh, yeah, that's a good prediction. I like that one. I hope so for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. And the afterword in this volume made me think that the next volume will give us some action, like combat type of action of some kind. And I don't think it's going to be the Halgals and Ahon family again. Like, I don't think it's going to be anything there. But rather, I think it may be some conflict between the Halgal clan and the Badon clan as they're trying to settle a pact or, you know, or whatever will happen. Because they haven't, I guess the leaders of the respective clans haven't met yet. And that's bound to happen. And I think there could be some friction there.
So you're saying because she mentions a possibility of brief showers of arrows?
Yes. I think that's alluding to some kind of conflict.
But in the previous volume, she said that Amir would catch something. She was joking. And she didn't. So why could she not be joking here too?
I guess. I mean, it could be. It could be. But I'm going to at least grasp at the straws that we have.
I appreciate it. I mean, the other two things she says seem pretty obviously going to happen. The twins' wedding and the showers of love or whatever it is, you know, the chance of love for Pariah. Love tornadoes.
Yes. So yeah, I think the most likely place where we could get some fighting potentially, I think, in my opinion, would be between the Halgal clan and the Badon clan. Alternatively,
yeah.
We could see something related to either the Numaji or the Russians, either of them causing trouble for probably the Halgal clan, to be fair.
Maybe I'm putting the pace too slowly, but my prediction was that we would learn the time and date of the Halgal-Badon meeting, or even maybe even start the meeting, to be honest. Because technically they haven't aligned yet. They still have to have an actual meeting.
Exactly.
Between the elders or whatever.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they did that, although maybe that is too slow paced for, I don't know.
It's hard to tell, yeah.
Straight to the action. But yeah, I almost think that Halgal and Badon are not going to fight each other per se. I feel like they're going to try to pick fights with other people.
Mm.
And I guess eventually the Russians, maybe. Or maybe the Numaji clan, like you were saying, like maybe they go and try to pick a bone with them.
Precisely.
So, I think it's more. Well, I shouldn't say more likely, but.
Well, as I was listening to you speak, I think that is definitely at least a good possibility.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to completely trust the Badon clan. It seems, you know, why were they so willing to accept the alliance, but maybe they're just really not chill but friendly people. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Badon clan may have enemies of their own that we don't know about, like, and conflicts that they need help settling that the Halgal clan are unaware of.
Yeah. And that makes it beneficial for both parties in that case.
Right. Hopefully in the next volume we will find out if blood really is thicker than water.
Yeah. So how thick is that blood? meaning, we're family, but how close are we?
Right.
How many generations apart are we exactly?
Exactly. I mean, regardless of how close in the family tree they are to one another, evidently they aren't, like, they've never actually been a family together. So I think it, regardless, it's probably going to be a bit tricky.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I kind of get the feeling we may not get a lot of focus on that struggle, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, as for predictions, I don't really have much more.
We already really went into my final prediction about the pocket watch, so I'm good.
Oh, yes, yes. But yeah, that was volume 4. I think maybe this was a slightly weaker volume than the first 3, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
While I still definitely liked it, I think I enjoyed the first 3 a bit more. Maybe it's because of Lila and Laylee. I think they, especially for, in the majority of the volume, they kind of rubbed me the wrong way a lot of the time. Just their characters. not the writing itself, but just the way these characters are. But because they were such a big part of the volume, maybe that brought it down for me a little bit. However, I do like the way that they are progressing. So I do think there's potential for the next volume to, well, for me to maybe like it more. As well as the fact that they're not here to stay, most likely, like in the long term.
yeah.
I probably should preface, though, that I don't dislike either this volume or these characters. It's just like, I guess I like them less than, I guess, the Ahon family, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Ahon family is peak family. No,
right. I mean they are. I
mean, you can't beat Amir at this point for me. And I mean, and Amir and Paria, they're great. Talos was enjoyable. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to love and a lot of characters.
Like, yeah, I think the first 3 volumes were really, really strong in my opinion. This one wasn't as strong, but it was still definitely good.
I really liked it.
Okay, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that.
I still put it up there, personally. I mean, they're not, I wouldn't say they're as deep, per se, but I think it's still fascinating to see different characters, types of personalities in this kind of a setting where it's different from my Western mindset, you know? So I liked it and find it charming. And I'll be honest, I do kind of like those gremlin characters, kind
of, you know? That's fair, absolutely.
Mischievous. I mean, maybe in real life it'd be like, oh my gosh, you guys, such a pain. Especially if they were my daughters. I'm like, oh.
And there's two of them.
Where did I go wrong? There's two of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really thought it was charming in the end, and I think this is an 8 out of 10 story so far for me.
Lovely. And
I think that's up from a 7 out of 10.
Great. Great. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. You said 7 last time. And I think I said 8 last time. And I think it remains a solid 8 out of 10 for me as well.
Yeah.
Great. Well, excited for the next book. If you enjoy our content, you can follow us on Twitter at UmamiManga. And it would be lovely if you'd like to support us by rating our show on the podcast platforms and subscribing to our channel Umami Manga on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time when we'll talk about Volume 5. Bye-bye!
See you later! Playing the Konosuba game.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why I didn't realize it was... I knew it would be a visual novel. I didn't realize it was like a... Kind of almost a dating visual novel.
Ooh.
You definitely have endings with one of the girls that you try to get your affinity up with. So it's definitely a visual novel in the traditional sense. But also it's about getting these different outfits and then getting the girls to wear these outfits.